I am working on an incredible headache right now. That's only nice. Getting worse. So,
good job.
This will be fun.
I'm sure.
Buy a comic that might cost more than a dime. Come meet the brothers who are here to waste your time.
Welcome back to the Dime Comic Bros podcast. I am one of your hosts, Spencer, joined by Jacob.
Hello.
Super secret agent man. Still on a super secret mission.
I am the tall, cool woman in a black dress.
Yeah, you kind of are. We recently switched our remote recording program for this episode, so we're going to see how this all works out. So it may or may not be shit. We'll find out.
Watch it not record at all. That Oof. Never happened before.
I think it's only happened like a couple of times, though, thankfully. I've lost more files than I think we have not recorded at all.
Yeah, but every time it happens, we swear we're just going to delete everything and jump off a cliff holding hands.
Every time I think I get a little closer to it. Especially the last right. couple of ones where it's like, that's a 5-hour video file. How did I lose that?
Yeah. We are here to talk about the news. And because I'm on my super secret mission, I kind of forgot that it's my job to edit the news that Spencer sends to me. So we're going to play the game of skim and summarize, where we quickly skim over the article and then briefly tell you what it's talking about. It's my favorite game.
Something tells me that that's a joke.
First off is from DC.com. DC announces the Joker Year One. Da, 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 da. It's a cool cover where there's a puddle shaped like a bat, but the Joker's in the reflection holding a red fishbowl tank. The Joker Year One begins in Batman number 142 by Chip Zdarsky, Giuseppe Comencoli, Stefano Nessi, Andrea Sorrentino, Alejandro Sanchez, and Dave Stewart. It will be published February 6th, 2024. Ooh, another cool cover. That one's by Giuseppe. So it looks like it's part of the Chip Zdarsky run by itself. It's not going to be its own book, but I'm sure it'll be collected in a trade eventually.
Yes. So there's been some shenanigans going on about this, or kind of adjacent to this, that I tried to follow up on when I noticed it. The most recent Joker run, The Man Who Couldn't Stop Laughing, or something like that. It's, I believe, written by Matthew Rosenberg. It has been getting a good reception, and it's doing some weird... It's not three Jokers, but it's kind of like three Jokers. And then in Chip Zdarsky's run, he's already teased bringing back that concept from a couple years ago, and it looks like this might have something to do with it. So, as usual... stop canonizing his origins, but also if you're gonna do it, at least do it well. Like, if at this point we've been running off of the Killing Joke as canon for like 30 years now, at least if you're gonna expand on it, make it good. And Chip Zdarsky's a good writer, so hopefully there's something
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not like so wrapped up into the rest of his series that you have to like read that for context or whatever. I hope you can just get the trade. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I think considering it's only a couple of issues, it's probably going to be a little bit smaller than the other arcs, because I know the Batman went to another universe for a little bit. That was like two trades, I think, and then he got back pretty recently, a few issues ago, from another alternate thingy. So I'm assuming it's kind of normal stuff again, I guess. So hopefully it turns out well. But yeah, I assume it'll probably be like a smaller trade than normal.
I have a quick aside. I might have, what do we call it? Oblong ball playing in the background on a TV. And I just saw a commercial for the Scientology channel.
What the fuck? That's not okay.
No, it's not.
That just... I don't like that.
Anyway.
Also from DC.com, Red Hood, The Hill. Jason Todd returns to The Hill in a new series from Sean Martinbrough and Sanford Green. Fan favorite writer Sean Martinbrough and artist Sanford Green bring Red Hood to a neighborhood that was once one of the most dangerous in Gotham City. In Red Hood, The Hill, a 6-issue series debuting in February of 2024. It's also going to be collecting Red Hood issues 51 and 52. There's a zero issue for this as well. In Gotham City's early days, the Hill was one of Gotham City's most dangerous neighborhoods, one that required the residents to band together to keep themselves safe when the police and sometimes even Batman wouldn't. Now, as the Hill finds itself gentrifying, old habits die hard as the vigilante known only as Strike works with her team to keep the town safe, but she's not alone. Jason Todd, one of the Hill's newest residents, is more than happy to don the visage of Red Hood to help Strike keep his new home safe. But a new villain is emerging from the shadows. Will Red Hood, Strike, and the Hill's small militia of vigilantes be able to keep their homes safe? This series features a main cover by series artist Green with a variant cover by Tirso Khans. This looks really good. One, the interior art looks fantastic, and also Red Hood hasn't had his own solo series in a while. He was the main protagonist in the Task Force Z run, which I think ended kind of recently. It was basically Task Force X, but with, like, Lazarus Pit resurrected zombies, which looked cool. I haven't read it yet, but he hasn't headlined a series, I think, since Rebirth, so, like, 2017 or 18. So this is cool.
Ooh. Completely and unrelated. So the other day I witnessed some people playing Marvel Zombies, the board game, and I walked over there just to look over their shoulder, see what it was and what it looked like. And it was pretty cool. There were a lot of little mini pigs and they looked pretty freaking nasty and gross. And I was like, yeah, I'm just curious. I read the book or whatever. And one of the guys said that the DC version is on Kickstarter right now. So there's cool. My bit of news.
That's neat. Also, speaking of DC, yet again, DC and Max announced that Harley Quinn is getting renewed for a 5th season. That makes
Whoa.
Sense. Amazing. It's one of their only currently running TV shows that's still pretty popular. I can't imagine why they want to continue it.
I thought we said when season 4 was announced that it was the finale.
It was speculated to be, but it was never officially announced in the last one. It was speculated to be at the time because that was right around when the CW shows were getting canned. So it was expected right. that would also be getting the boot, but I guess not for now.
From Marvel.com now, a new Spider-Punk series gives Hobie Brown an encore. Announced today-ish by IGN, writer Cody Ziegler and artist Justin Mason will return to Earth 138 in February 2024 for a new adventure starring Spider-Punk and his friends. This time they'll find themselves up against a few familiar villains who want society to sing a different tune. A quote, y'all, it feels so friggin' cool to dive back into Earth 138 with Justin and explore the world of Hobie and the Spider-Band even more, Ziegler shared. There's some new additions to the Spider-Punk roster, some real dope villains, and some other cool stuff I don't want to spoil, but absolutely cannot wait for folks. And yes, there'll 100% be Spider-Punk Playlist Volume 2. It's going to be a run of 4 issues, and it's on sale February of 24.
I think the art looks fantastic.
It looks pretty cool.
I also like the new suit design. It's kind of like a halfway point between Spider-Punk's original comic suit from a couple of years ago and then the most recent Spider-Verse movie version. obviously that version is way too intricate to be drawing in a comic book every panel, so that was never going to happen. So this is like a decent medium, I think. Also,
I haven't read the original, so I don't have much to comment on this.
Borrow it from Colin when you get back. It's all right. The character's really good. The run was kind of short, but it's the same writer, I believe, so that's nice. Also from Marvel.com, the Marvel Universe proudly boasts two amazing Spider-Men, and this March they'll join forces in their first ongoing series ever, Spectacular Spider-Men. Not only will the series team up two of comic book's biggest icons, it'll also team up two industry superstars, writer Greg Weisman and artist Humberto Ramos. Weisman, known for writing the beloved animated Spectacular Spider-Man animated series, the best one ever, and creating Gargoyles, returns with all the web-slinging drama and adventure that made Spectacular Spider-Man a fan-favorite series. And who better to bring these new sagas to life than one of the definitive amazing Spider-Man artists, Spidey legend Humberto Ramos. Together, they introduce a fresh dynamic between Peter and Miles as superhero partners who swap intelligence and tips, combining their strength against threats and learn from each other's differences in age and experience. The duo's journey kicks off with an epic run-in with the Jackal, and fans can get their first look at the action in a special announcement video, blah, blah, blah. I have been screaming about wanting one of these for years. These two characters have not been in a book since the Ultimate Universe was still around, and that book kind of sucked. They're both incredibly popular, and obviously, but also the current runs have been really, really hit or miss, and a lot of it's been, frankly, shit. So this is a good opportunity for just actual good, fun, adventure team-up stuff. Like the game, baby.
That's nice. I'm glad for you. From Marvel.com, starting December 22nd, there will be 9 episodes of What If Season 2. There was a teaser trailer release, and they'll release one episode a day for 9 days. I want to be excited for this, but I have a really big but there, but I don't want it to be serialized. I want it to be separate episodes. I don't want it to be like a running story, just like season one kind of turned out to be. I don't want it to be like a continuation of season one. And there's kind of a couple of hints that it might be sometimes sort of.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the individual episodes look more interesting than season one.
Yeah.
I still don't really love the animation style, but also one of the episodes is a leftover from season one that they didn't finish on time.
I think the animation looks a little bit better this time around.
I think it just looks less rushed. I just don't like the style, like, in and of itself. It definitely looks like better executed than it was last time around. It's been a pretty decent gap between the two seasons, but I do agree. It was neat to see the Watcher and stuff, but I really didn't love that they felt the need to tie it in to the larger ongoing narrative. It was kind of unnecessary.
I just also don't like him being like, I don't usually do sequels. It's like, ew, no, this isn't Deadpool.
Yeah. Also from Marvel, nope. Bad Deed goes unpunished on January 10th, 2024, when Marvel Studios Echo launches on Disney Plus and Hulu. There is a new trailer and poster that were released at the same time. It is a 5-episode streaming event, which spotlights Maya Lopez as she is pursued by Wilson Fisk, or as I like to say, Filson Whisk, and his criminal empire. When the journey brings her home, she must confront her own family and legacy. All 5 episodes are streaming on both platforms on the same day, and they will be available on Hulu until April 9th. It's not in this article, but this is officially underneath the Marvel Studios spot Spotlight banner, which was announced directly after this announcement as their new in-house brand for more disconnected, grounded stories, blah, blah, blah. It looks fucking amazing. I lost my marbles.
Spencer has a grin from ear to ear as you read that whole article because it's bringing Daredevil back, baby.
Yes. And even more than that, just it seems to be taking the character somewhat seriously and also the violence on screen. It is the first Marvel Studios project to get a mature rating. Not like a rating is everything, but it pretty clearly demonstrates that there's going to be a level of blood and violence expected, and the lead writer has also expressed multiple times that Echo is still a villain in this show, so they're not leaning too heavily away from the villainous aspects, and also the poster just slaps really hard. As I say, every new Marvel project, it's either so over or we're so back, and right now we are so back.
Going back to DC.com for a second, we got DC announcing DC Compact Comics. Today, global publisher DC announced a new line in their graphic novel slate, DC Compact Comics, featuring a 5.5-inch by 8.5-inch standard book trim for trade paperback novels. The new format pulls best-selling new reader-friendly titles from DC's Evergreen Library, as the first books offered in this new lineup of compact editions of adult graphic novels, Watchmen, and All-Star Superman, among others, will go on sale beginning in June of 2024, retailing at $10 to launch this new program. The DC Compact Comics price and size is perfect for readers of prose and manga looking to pick up a new reader-friendly storyline in a self-contained full-color graphic novel, said Anne DePies, SVP and General Manager of DC. This smaller cut is the most widely circulated soft cover book size in the U.S. and is popular among graphic novel aficionados in international markets. At $10, it's a great price point for retailers to stock these classic titles. For readers, DC Compact Comics deliver a new graphic novel reading experience that fits in the palm of their hand with no loss of readability. The initial lineup, Watchmen, Batman, The Court of Owls, All-Star Superman, Far Sector, Wonder Woman, Earth One, American Vampire, Book One, Batman Hush, Joker, Harley Quinn, and the Gotham City Sirens, Catwoman, Trail of the Catwoman. Those are some interesting inclusions. Very interesting. Like Joker by Brian Azarello. Oh, no, I was thinking that was the Black Label Wide Edition, but no, that was just a regular book. Earth One, Wonder Woman didn't do very well, right?
I don't remember how the sales were, but it is self-contained, so there's that. I mean, it does fit the bill. I'm assuming this will be expanding over time. I was talking with Rich and Kyle from Jetpack Comics, our local comic shop, about this, and this has been cooking for a while, it turns out. As the comic market has been shifting around and been having some sales trouble, especially post-COVID, there's been a lot of people in the business and the art sides kind of clamoring to take lessons from the international markets, primarily manga, because they have a lot more, like, new reader-friendly titles and ways of selling them. Most manga are either sold in this size, like, compact trade or a magazine with multiple stories in it, and I think this is a really good idea. I am never going to buy one of these because I already have half these books. But I think for new people, like, this is half the price of a normal paperback. They'll probably fall apart a little quickly. But if you're just I don't know, wandering down the street and you see a child, you can just throw one of these at them. It won't hurt them. And then they get a new book and they can be introduced to this sort of stuff in a more digestible format. Rather than trying to bite the bullet and drop $20 to $30 for a book.
The problem with that logic is that some of these are some of DC's like harshest books, like Joker and Watchmen. Like, these are clearly aimed at adults.
I think so in the announcement when they said people who read prose, so like regular books, I think is what they're starting with. And manga, despite typically being in black and white, can be pretty fucking violent. So I don't know. I feel like the cultural differences are difficult to keep tabs on. Like, because you have a lot of mangas are incredibly violent, but they're still primarily for teenagers. It's just a matter of how the tone and the violence is presented. I'm not saying that these books necessarily fit that bill, but I don't know. There's probably a tumble of, like, legal rights that they probably have to go through to be able to sell them like this. There's probably behind-the-scenes stuff with the original artists and writers. There's probably reasons why they had to pick these ones to start, but I think as, like, a new business practice, this is a really good idea.
It's interesting for sure. I'm excited for it. I'll probably get a bunch of these as time goes on for, like, mid books that I don't want to buy for full price. Like, I've heard mixed things about, All-Star Superman and Wonder Woman Earth One. So I'll probably bite the bullet and just pick it up for $10. Like, you can't,
whoever's telling you that All-Star Superman isn't like the best Superman book of all time is an idiot. You need new friends.
I thought for sure your review with Colin. Oh, no, I'm thinking the Frank Miller one.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what it was.
No, All-Star Superman is like one of the most widely regarded stories. It has Frank Quietly's art, man. I'm actually in the middle of reading that one right now, to be fair.
Wow.
So good. From comicbook.com, another interesting industry change. After 18 months after the colossal change to Comixology, Amazon has announced another major shift for the digital comics app, and that's they're getting rid of the standalone app entirely. In an email to users today, or last week, Amazon confirmed that starting in a few weeks, on December 4th, they're merging Comixology and Kindle applications on all platforms. The Comixology app will then be no longer usable, meaning that as of the date of the email release, they have begun syncing users' libraries to their Kindle libraries. Amazon noted, apparently, that they're upgrading the Kindle app to deliver the great digital comics, graphic novels, and manga experience that users have become accustomed to with Comixology. And there's a bunch of different, listed reasons. I figured this was going to happen eventually because they just trashed Comixology last year when they bought it. Like, it went to shit immediately, and it's been slowly getting better. I've only been reading them on Kindle recently when I have to read digital books, so it makes more sense. It's stupid, monopolization bad, et cetera, but, like, if you're going to own both of them, just make them one thing.
And it's not like one really does anything better than the other. Like,
not anymore. A couple of years ago, fine. Comixology was great, but it's not anymore.
I don't know. I don't think I've had a good experience with Comixology. It was always kind of meh as a service. So, and I've had, right when I started buying comics, I bought a couple of comic books on Kindle, not Comixology. So I really don't care. As long as they make it better to read the comics somehow, I'm happy.
Yeah.
From comicbook.com, Marvel is introducing a new Ghost Rider. Despite the character having an ongoing series active at this moment, Marvel is rebooting Ghost Rider with a new number one issue coming in March. Benjamin Percy will continue writing the series as Marvel newcomer Danny Kim will take over art duties from the committee of artists that have worked on the current ongoing. Corey Smith has handled art duties on the majority of the issues in the title with fill-in artists, including Jeff Shaw, Carlos Nieto, and others. All the covers of the current run have been illustrated by Bjorn Behrens, who will depart the series and open space up for Juan Ferreira. Everything in Ghost Rider is always Mephisto. Mephisto confirmed. Readers get numb to it. I felt the same way about Sabretooth and Wolverine. He's the big bad, and creators always rush the clash between the two. So in that title, we took Sabretooth off the table completely by tossing him in the pit in Krakoa, Percy told Marvel.com earlier this year. The idea was to build up his offstage mythology so that when Wolverine and he finally duked it out, it would be especially meaningful. What have I done in the meantime? Built up other baddies who don't see the spotlight as much, like Omega Red and Mikhail Rasputin. He added, we're doing something similar in Ghost Rider. Of course, Johnny will eventually battle Mephisto, but let's give some other nasties a turn. When I read Brisson's run, I felt like Blackheart naturally would have been deeply covetous of Johnny's time as the King of Hell, so he'd be aiming to take Blaze off his throne and toss him in the dungeon, so to speak. Where's Ghost Rider heading in his latest story? Yeah. New Ghost Rider in March.
So, as a current reader, this sounds cool. I believe there's only one more issue of this run before they take a break, is what it looks like. It's up to issue 20 right now, and an annual, I believe, or two annuals. It's been really good across the board. Benjamin Percy is really good when he's given space to flex his muscles. The new artist looks cool. I don't think I'm gonna get it. I'm trying to cut down on my pull list, and I've been getting Ghost Rider for like a year now. So I think I might just drop off this once they do the reboot, but it sounds interesting.
Give up the opportunity to have the number one issue introducing new Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's going to be a fake out. I don't think they're doing another new one. We have so many fucking Ghost Riders already, and we haven't seen Robbie Reyes in years outside of the Avengers. So I think it's a lie. I like the fact that he's trying to integrate some stuff from the Ed Brisson run a few years ago. I did like that one, but it got canceled due to COVID and bad sales and blah, blah, blah. So that kind of got shoved to the wayside at the end of it. So it looks good. I think I've had my fix for now. So we'll see how it goes. I am now remembering that article we had already covered a while back, so I am dumb.
Nice.
Smart big brain boy. Of course, I unplugged my mouse and used the trackpad, so I'm slow. From comicbook.com, Marvel is celebrating the 60th anniversaries of Black Widow and Hawkeye with a new team-up series. The duo of superheroes are cornerstones of the Avengers after starting their comic career as villains. The two of them have only had to rely on their natural abilities compared to their superpowered allies like Thor, Hulk, and Spider-Man. Black Widow recently got a power upgrade thanks to an acquired Venom symbiote, but her next adventure will be alongside Hawkeye in a new limited series celebrating the duo's big anniversary. And they were roommates. They're besties, we promise. Marvel Comics editor-in-chief C.B. Cebulski announced Black Widow and Hawkeye during an appearance on the Lucca Comics and Games Festival in Italy. What the fuck? The new 4-issue limited series comes from writer Stephanie Phillips and artist Paolo Villanelli. Both Hawkeye and Widow's past will be explored, which is filled with secrets and espionage, but will also address Black Widow and her new symbiote. The eyes of a hawk and the venom of a widow. Even when Black Widow and Hawkeye had no one to trust, they still had each other, even though their paths sometimes diverged. The description reads, so when Clint Barton is accused of a rogue assassination attempt that puts the U.S. and Madripoor at odds, a Venom-equipped Natasha Romanoff thinks nothing of coming to his aid. But as echoes of their past ripple into the present, it will take all their faith in each other and the lessons learned along the way to protect their futures. This looks neat. The art looks cool. I'm a sucker for these anniversary stories. Very few of them are groundbreaking. Usually I don't like the circle jerk stories of like, wow, look how good we are. But like when it comes to doing like an official anniversary thing, like that's fine. And they're usually good.
Okay.
And they were roommates.
But only roommates.
Yeah, no, they've never had
sex. In a platonic fashion.
They've never had sex, we promise.
No.
No. They're just besties.
Comicbook.com, Marvel announces X-Men Forever. It'll help tell the final stories in Marvel's Krakoan era. The final mysteries of blah 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 will be unraveled this spring in a new series titled X-Men Forever. Oh my gosh, the ads are horrible. The X-Men have had plenty of highs and lows, blah, 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 blah. This was also announced by C.B. Sabelski while attending the Lucca Comics and Games Festival in Italy. The four-issue limited series comes from Immortal X-Men writer Kieran Gillen and artist Luca Maresca. X-Men Forever picks up the story threads from Immortal X-Men, including the quest for Dominion, the interpersonal conflicts of the Quiet Council, the escape from the White Hot Room, and the divine intervention of the Phoenix. Fans can see the important role the Phoenix plays in the series on the cover of the first issue by Mark Brooks. Wow, would you look at that?
Horny cover.
Hold on. Number one goes on sale March 20th.
Horny
cover. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't understand why they're finishing the Krakoan era. It seems too early.
I don't know.
That's all I got.
Got an exclusive from Deadline.com. Deadline hears that filmmaker Destin Daniel Cretton has decided to step away as director of Marvel Studios' Avengers Kang Dynasty to focus on his other Marvel projects. This is an amicable exit, I understand, as Cretton remains fully in the Marvel Studios family. In fact, he is in talks about directing future films. Cretton is currently busy on the Marvel Studios and Disney Plus series Wonder Man, which he is co-creating with Andrew Guest, who is serving as showrunner. Cretton EPs the series and also directs the first two episodes. And as recently announced, the series is going to be under the Marvel Spotlight banner, which are standalone series and not a part of the greater Marvel Cinematic Universe. He is also currently working on a sequel to the film Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which made fucking bank and was very well received a couple of years ago. Holy cow, that was 2021. Whew. Yeah. So it's cool that this has more information in it than just he's moving away from doing the one movie. We know that Kang Dynasty has been having a lot of negative buzz around it right now because Marvel's been having issues and stuff, and they may or may not be moving away from Kang as a character. We don't know, whatever. I think they're going to push the movie like way further out, which is a good idea. it makes sense that he wants to focus on other stuff. It's good that they're keeping him in the family, because I remember when he was announced as directing this movie, I was quite excited. I think he did a good job with Shang-Chi, and this also confirms that Wonder Man is not getting canned. There was some speculation that it might be getting canned because it stopped filming due to the strikes, like, immediately. So there was just some weird press going around. So it's nice to confirm that that's still happening. And they're also still following up on Shang-Chi instead of kind of just letting things go.
Yes. Last one for me. This one's from Variety.com. Superman and Lois is going to end with season 4 over on the CW. The upcoming 4th season will be Superman and Lois's last. The series' final 10 episodes are set to air in 2024.
Rip.
I was looking for anything interesting said by anybody important, and I don't see anything.
No, not much. But this is officially the end of all of them.
We're thrilled about what we have in store in our final season and can't wait for everyone to watch as Superman, Lois, and all our heroes face off against the biggest threat in the show's history, Lex Luthor. That is a quote from showrunners Todd Helving and Brent Fletcher. That seems like big news, because I'm pretty sure you said they've been edging Lex Luthor the whole time.
They did for the first 3 seasons, I believe, and then we talked about him being cast for the 4th season, but also the 4th season got the reduced episode count and cut the budget like in half. So we'll see how this goes. But
okay.
I don't know. It's interesting, I think, to think of just like the actual end of all the CW stuff, like as a whole. They've been doing DC properties for like what, 13, 15 years now. It's impressive. Like, most of it's crap, but like still, I don't know. It's interesting to think about, I think. And then last one for me, this was just a little nugget I found that I thought was cool. It's from Image Comics, and it's the announcement for The Deviant. As snow falls over Milwaukee in 1972, a bloodstained Santa Claus commits unimaginable atrocities against young men. 50 years later, a troubled young writer interviews this so-called deviant killer who still maintains his innocence from behind bars. As Christmas approaches once again, the past returns wielding a sharpened axe. Eisner Award writer James Tynan IV, my literal dad, and acclaimed artist Joshua Hickson reunite for a pitch-black holiday horror story. And it goes on sale, issue 1 of 9, on November 15th, and I really want to get this. The teaser art looks fucking awesome. Joshua Hickson has been doing some really interesting stuff lately. His art's fantastic, and James Tynan is like the best horror writer right now. So, gimme.
Yes.
I'm also just a sucker for like holiday-themed horror stuff. As of like yesterday, I watched a Thanksgiving themed slasher movie. I dig this shit. So gimme.
What? It's the board game that I talked about is based on Deceased. And there's sense. Like, there's Dark Knight's metal ingredients. There's Gotham Knights, not the video game. The ingredients, there's Unkillables.
Weird.
There's a lot of stuff here. This is cool.
That's odd. It's weird that it's if it's an official project and they're doing a Kickstarter. Weird.
I think that's so that they can DLC the shit out of all this stuff.
Probably. But that is the end of the news. Mr. Jacob.
Yeah, we'll have to look into that later. Because that's cool.
Hopefully it's not as fucking expensive as the Hellboy board game that we were going to get into a couple years ago. Because that was insane.
This looks more expensive, to be honest.
Oh, fucking kill me. I'm not buying it. My limit for a board game is like $50.
Oh, yeah, you're out. You're way out.
I'm sure. I'm sorry, I'm not investing that much money for, like, still having to gather a dozen morons to sit in my living room. And then right. We only play, like, twice. No thanks. Mr. Jacob, did you read anything this week?
Nope. I watched something.
Oh. What did you watch?
I watched... I watched Justice League War World. Have you seen it yet?
I have not seen it yet.
All right. This is very strange. It starts out with Wonder Woman in the Wild Wild West, only it's not the Wonder Woman we know. It's a different Wonder Woman. And then there's a hard cut to like kind of a caveman setting, or like the prehistoric section of heavy metal. But it's got Batman and Superman up in there, and they're kind of fucking around. And that was fun, a fun adventure. And then there's a hard cut. And then there's a black and white section where it feels kind of like the 50s and some aliens crash. And they start playing Among Us in a diner. And that's pretty cool. And then shit happens that ties all of this weird stuff together. But for most of the movie, it feels like shorts that are stapled together. And it's very, very harsh. It's very choppy. You're watching it like, why the hard cut? Where did that come from? It's very weird. And then it turns out to be a prequel for another animated movie coming out next year, probably. They were like, tune in next year for this event that's happening. So this movie was very strange. And the animation was cool. The settings were cool. The stories found in it were fun. Each of the settings, especially the black and white with the aliens and the Among Us in the diner, like, no, that's the alien that crashed and he's trying to kill us all. No, that's the alien. It was fun and it was entertaining, but this movie's flow was not very feng shui. That's how that's words rough. Work, I think.
I think so. That's kind of what I heard. It looked cool, though. I'll get to it eventually.
Yeah. I'm also kind of not sure how I feel about the actress that voices Wonder Woman is clearly trying to sound like your mom. What's her name?
Gal Gadot.
Yes, that's the one. Thank you. She lays it on thick with the I'm probably Israeli accent, and it's kind of weird because I don't think it's been like that in most of the animated movies. But you would know better.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't remember if I.
That's been doing Wonder Woman for a long time.
I don't remember if I watched the Wonder Woman in World War II or whatever the fuck. The one that's in continuity with this. I don't remember if I watched that one. So I don't remember.
Very weird, not painful, just fine. I think I gave it 3 stars. And it was free on HBO.
Well, I mean, at least you didn't spend money for it.
Right.
Something I did spend money on was, we're going back to the good shit. Doctor Strange, what is it that disturbs you, Steven? It is a graphic novel. It is a really cool behind the scenes production. So originally, it's made by P. Craig Russell, who did a lot of comics in the 80s and 90s. And he pitched a script and a plot for a story that was used in the ongoing. I think it was primarily rewritten by J.M.D. Mateus. Is a really good story, but it's basically Doctor Strange goes to another dimension. He gets sucked in, and then the queen of the dimension is like, "You're gonna be my bitch," and he's like, "Hot no," and then they fight. There isn't much to it. It's pretty short, but it's cool. And then after that, Marvel gave Pete Craig Russell the license. Holy hair! Jeez, dude. Marvel editorial gave Pete Craig Russell a budget to remake his story, like rewrite his own old script and then make it into a graphic novel. And then he did all the art for it. And it's really, really fucking cool. Yes, Neanderthal Batman.
I was thinking more like a psycho witch because there's like strands sticking out everywhere.
This paperback includes both versions of this story, as well as some other kind of random bits thrown in there. I like both versions quite a lot. They're fairly similar, but they do have a decent amount of changes. The full version of it is a lot bigger. It's expanded. It wasn't in an ongoing. It was a particularly made graphic novel, so, you know, duh. So I liked comparing the similarities between the two stories and then a lot of differences. Stephen doesn't really have a through line in this story. He's pretty unchanged, which does happen a lot with Strange. He does have a lot of adventures where he goes to a place, he fixes a thing, or he fights a war or whatever, and he doesn't change a lot, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that necessarily. I just wish that there was a little bit more thematic depth to this story. The artwork is bonkers good. I'm now looking into P. Craig Russell's artwork, like his whole back catalog, because he's wicked fucking talented. Just really cool. Good book. Not much more than that. I bought it for $19 off of Amazon. I'd recommend a sale, maybe, or buying one of the two stories individually. Like buying just a graphic novel. I think the original published version of this one from a while back is just the graphic novel, and then you can just buy the original short version in the ongoing run. So that was a neat little thingy. The fuck are you looking at, boy?
I pulled up IMDb so that I can talk about my next topic, and then I was reminded that the Madam Web trailer came out, and you didn't include it in the news, so I was confused.
I forgot, but honestly, I don't even want to talk about it. It just looks so shit.
Okay. I didn't
even
watch
it. Everyone looks smoking hot, and I'm going to watch it exclusively for the smoking hot people.
Well, there you go. Now it's part of the news. I watched the Netflix exclusive The Killer released last week, I think. It stars Michael Fassbender and Tilda Swinton and a bunch of other people, but I don't recognize any of them. This, just like Spencer's review last week, is a surprise review of a movie version of a comic.
Wait, what?
Yes, sir.
I knew it was the next... What? I've been looking forward to this. I didn't know it was based on a book.
Apparently. I looked it up on Goodreads, and it is pretty heavily with the nihilistic French politics, and a lot of people didn't like it for that, and they were hoping that it would be written better for the movie.
Yeah, no, a French graphic novel series. I'm sure that was depressing. I'm going to read it.
And so that led me to look at the reviews that what other people were saying about this movie, because I was in need of words. And there was a pretty large consensus of there's nothing wrong with this movie, but it's kind of boring and it doesn't really do anything. Michael Fassbender is the killer. Oops, shit, spoilers. And he misses a hit. He messes up, and then somebody goes to his home and messes up one of his friends or wife or girlfriend or whatever she is. That part's never explained. And so he goes on a John Wick adventure. But I had a really hard time following why he was John Wicking these people. He just kind of snaps and kills a bunch of people. The the intro song bit shows all kinds of different ways that a professional hitman could kill people. And every time he John Wicks someone, he pretty much just shoots them in the face. That was my biggest complaint. I was expecting like Agent 47 creative kills, and it was just like he stands in a room while his victim talks at him and begs for their life, and he's just like shrugs and shoots them. The movie itself looks really good. There are really good shots. It's an experienced director. I forget his name. Hold, please. David Fincher, who did the movie. Yeah. You'll know one of these.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fincher is, like, everybody's first, like, film bro daddy.
He directed a Gone Girl. He directed a Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He directed a Zodiac. He directed Fight Club, Seven. So he knows a thing or two about movies. And it's evident when you're looking at it. There isn't a bad shot. There's perfect lighting. One complaint I had is that the killer puts an earbud in and listens to music to stay calm as he's performing a hit. And the camera cuts from his perspective looking at his target to looking at him. And the audio changes accordingly. So when you're looking from his perspective, the music is in that ear as you're watching. And then it looks to him and it's muted like it's coming, like you're standing next to him and you can hear the music bouncing off his head. And it switches perspectives often to the point that it got annoying for me. But that's a personal take. Huh. And also I was watching with earbuds in instead of like with speakers around me in a room. So I'm sure it's different when you're viewing it on your TV or whatever. It's just kind of boring. It felt like it should have had a lot more bang for its buck. There's big acting names. There's big names in the credits. And he just kills people. Even the climax of the movie is the most boring part of the movie. He just shrugs and walks out. Like, it's anticlimactic.
Strange. I've been putting it off since it came out last week, and I want to watch it. I just need to be in the right mood. So that's interesting.
There's chapter breaks, which I used frequently.
The piss, man.
I gave it 3.5 stars. I put it right next to Atomic Blonde, I'm pretty sure. So 3.5 stars is literally the, it's competent, but meh.
Yeah.
Your turn.
Meh.
Meh.
So another cool little thingy that I read, that was yet another Doctor Strange book, is Doctor Strange into Shambhala. It is a graphic novel from the 80s. It's written by J.M.D. Mateus with art, painted art by Dan Green.
I can hear the hate crimes as Colin's listening to this, and you double down on the Doctor Strange.
Oh, bitch, we're tripling down, motherfucker. You have no idea. So this is a really, really, like, well-historically regarded Doctor Strange story. This was from the time period when Marvel did a lot of graphic novels. And it's really strange. It hasn't been reprinted since its original printing, which is fucking weird. So my copy of this is, like, 35 years old, which is cool. It's certainly an off-kilter story, so I understand why it's not necessarily popular, but I would really expect this to be reprinted at some point. Doctor Strange goes on a little soul-searching adventure back to Nepal, where he met the Ancient One on the anniversary of the Ancient One's death. He is met by another one of the Ancient One's disciples who gives him a gift, who apparently the Ancient One left to give to Stephen on this particular day. And it's a box. It's just a wooden box. And on the inside, after various shenanigans trying to open it, it's just a series of mirrors. Doctor Strange gets real fucking confused and angry and is like, dude, what's the meaning of life? I'm going to break this thing. And then he breaks it and he gets sucked into another dimension because reasons. He ends up meeting a bunch of gods / lords who rule over Shambhala, which is another like dimension outside of ours. He gets sent on a quest, which he thinks is from the Ancient One, to do a bunch of things, to you know, say certain spells in certain locations, so he can, what he thinks is effectively end the world. The way it's presented is that these entities want to bring about a new golden age of magic and spiritualism, and to do that, the way that it's phrased is that they're basically going to kill 75% of the population. And Doctor Strange is like, dude, what the fuck? I mean, I'll do it because I submit myself to the authority, but also, like, what the fuck? And then it follows him going around a really cool network of different... basically, in this book, like, mythological and spiritual locations are kind of like the nervous system of the planet. So there's little like nodes in different locations, and then you can follow them and they're connected to other places. So like they'll be, you know, underneath churches and in temples and stuff like that, which is really cool. Once he does all of the things, he fights some inner demons and turns out that he just read the situation wrong, basically. And this new, you know, spiritual revolution of sorts is going to happen on the inside. Nobody dies. Well, now, get owned. It's a internal change that is affected because of all the spiritual layers going on. This book is really fucking heady, and it's extremely thorough in its understanding of a lot of mostly Hindu and Buddhist mysticism. It's really, really cool. I think that the pacing was one of the best parts of it. It was very easy to read. I don't remember how long it is, but it blew through pretty quickly. I was able to keep reading his thoughts and the narration as it went along, and I never felt like it dragged, which was really cool. The art is bonkers good. It's all watercolor painting, and I can't even. It's so beyond amazing. The majority of the lettering is also painted by Green. It is like Sanskrit text, which I think is really cool. There are text bubbles. It's just fairly rare. Most of the voiceover is done in like very traditional, like I don't even know. It's just, it's very old school, and it's in a good way. The themes and the ideas are really cool, and I like how little action there is. There is one action sequence that is about, I think, three panels. Everything else is a lot more hippie woo-woo shit, and that was way more up my alley. I bought this for $25, and I think it was well worth it, and I really, really want to get it reprinted, because this was really, really cool. This is one of the better Doctor Strange, like, upper echelon of Doctor Strange stories. Like, next to Fall Sunrise, for sure. Are you winning, son?
Red Sky, Fall Sun, Moon Set?
Yes.
Yes.
You dork. Is Jacob strapped?
Yes, I need a question.
Oof. Nah, we roll it. We're already at an hour.
You said you were tripling down.
But I can triple down later, because I still have more Doctor Strange books.
Whoa.
Like I said, I'm reading pretty much everything. So we just roll it for later. I had something, words, and I forgot the words. That is the end of this show for now. A big thank you goes out to our patrons over at patreon.com/DimeComicBrosNetwork. Thank you to Caitlin and Jeff Lorenz. They help keep this show on the air and, you know, the lights on and so on. They let me buy all these weird, obscure books that I have to buy off of funky corners of the internet that are probably illegal. we have a bunch of different cool rewards on our Patreon, including early and exclusive access to our content. So make sure you go check it out. If you want to support us, we'd greatly appreciate it. Also, a thank you to our partners over at Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire. Make sure to buy your comics locally whenever you can. Support local comic shops and local businesses. It helps keep this industry afloat, which we kind of need right now because it's not doing super hot. Next week will be another D&D session. And I think I'll actually be caught up by then. So, skibbidi-bidoo.
Excellent.
Fuck it. We are indubitably bowling.